The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Boker Tov, Anthony, how are you?
Boker Tov, Chanukah Sameach. It's the last light of Chanukah tonight. I hope everybody's been enjoying a good Chanukah. It's our opportunity to really celebrate. And for Israeli school kids back to school next week.
Yeah. We've got a message for you from one of our listeners, from Anton. He says, could I please ask you or to comment on Ayelet Shaked? Is she still popular? We haven't heard anything for a long time. And apparently she is a good politician. Good question. Thanks, Anton.
Well, Ayelet Shaked had a lot of focus on her as the former Minister of Justice in the previous government. She obviously didn't do quite so well in the previous election, as a result of which she's no longer really in the focus of the public eye in the way that she was before. But her name is still around, very much less than was the case before. She clearly continues to be a member of Knesset. Very much still aligned with Naftali Bennett, even though the two of them didn't really get together in the last election in the same way. So she's definitely come away from the headlines of the media. Is she popular? Well, I think that she also was something of a divisive figure. I mean, I think there were a lot of people who very much respected her and supported her, particularly being a woman achieving the achievements, the Ministry of Justice post that she achieved. So I think that she very much had a lot of respect. And it was interesting, excuse me, that she represented a religious party, the Baita Yudi, which also became part of the Yemen Alliance, even though she herself identifies as a secular person. So I think she had support from different sides of the population, different sides of society because of that. She's definitely reduced in her popularity and in her in the way that she's been exposed to the public, I would say, in recent times. But she will definitely be back. She's the type of person that you can't keep down for too long. And so I have no doubt that she will absolutely be back. It'll be interesting to see where she comes out in our next election, which we don't yet know if we're having or not, because the date hasn't firmly been set, but it seems as if though it'll be March the 16th as far as we can make out right now.
Wow. All right, Anthony, let's get on to some of the topics that you sent through. Israel prepares further details for the start of mass vaccination against coronavirus, which is set to begin next week. This is such an exciting time. Anthony, what are the latest details of the vaccination timetable? Who's getting it? How's it going to work? How's the rollout going to happen?
Okay, so I'll start by saying that I still haven't seen anything firm which says this is actually going to cost people money. This is a matter that just doesn't seem to be addressed at all. So therefore, my working assumption is that people who are members of a medical health organization will simply be getting it as part of their membership without any extra cost. The cost doesn't seem to be a factor anywhere in any of the things that I've read. And now we're talking like at the minor details of who's going to get it and when. We understand that Saturday night there will be a public event on TV where Prime Minister Netanyahu and Minister of Health Yuli Edelstein will both be vaccinated in front of the nation, followed on Sunday morning by President Ruvi Rivlin, who also intends to be vaccinated at a very early stage. And then the mass program will be rolled out. First will be healthcare workers, and not only healthcare workers, but specifically those who work in hospitals, medical staff at hospitals, and those who work frontline at medical health organizations and private health clinics. They are going to be the first of the first. Thereafter, they will be followed by people employed at geriatric and psychiatric hospitals, and also nursing and medical students. They will be next on list, together with members of Magen David Adom, emergency services, rescue services. They are going to be next on the list. And then, interestingly, nursing home employees and residents of nursing homes, as well as other Israelis who are over the age of 60. That's the first line of people who will be vaccinated by the Pfizer vaccine. Thereafter, people suffering from underlying health conditions, diabetes, obesity, lung disease, hypertension, patients with immunosuppression problems, those who've undergone organ transplants, they're going to be next on the list. And also, alongside that, as soldiers in the IDF will start to receive their vaccine probably by the end of next month. That's what we understand. And in fact, Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Aviv Kochavi, will be the first IDF soldier to get the vaccine. So he also is trying to be a public example, and he will receive the vaccine first. What's interesting for me is the people who will not receive the vaccine. There's a particular list of people who will not receive the vaccine, and that includes people who have recently recovered from COVID-19 and have antibodies. They will not get the vaccine. Pregnant or breastfeeding women will not get the vaccine, and people with severe allergies as well as children under 16. They're on the list of people who, at least for now, are not eligible to get the vaccine and won't be vaccinated along with that. It's not clear how long this whole program of vaccinating people will roll out, but I expect it will take a few months. Another article that I read says that something like up to 20% of Israelis will be willing to take the vaccine. So once before I saw something which said up to 50% of people will refuse to take or will not wish to take the vaccine. That number seems to be rising now, with a lot more people for some reason deciding that they don't want to take the vaccine. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens when the program begins and the medical health organizations start to advertise and call people in to take up on their right to be vaccinated, how many people will actually take up on it and how many people refuse, because I think that some of these numbers are a little misleading. It seems difficult for me to believe that less than 20% of Israelis actually intend to get the vaccination when it is available out there. So I think all of this is going to, there's going to be a lot of influence from those who've received it towards others who have yet to receive it. And I think that once the program begins and people begin to understand what the impact is on the ground, with people that they know who've received the vaccine, I think it may well change people's minds. You may well hear the rain outside. It's really, really raining. Lots and lots of water. We will perhaps talk a little bit about that before the end, but really heavy rainfall at the moment.
Okay, well, that's a good thing that you're getting heavy rainfall.
It is a good thing. Absolutely.
Rain and water is not a natural resource to Israel. Yeah. Anthony, just getting back to this, I mean, I also saw lots of different reports. And it obviously depends on which news source you read or listen to, because I was seeing reports that up to 40% of Israelis don't want to have the vaccine. And I do wonder why.
Well, I think that there are two camps here, Kathy. I think, first of all, there's just the anti-vax camp in general. So this is not about the COVID vaccination, but it's about vaccinations in general. We already know those people. Howard has a particular fondness for anti-vaxxers. We won't bring him in on his holiday at the moment, but he certainly has had his say. He's had his say about people who are anti-vaxxers. But also there is a genuine concern that this particular vaccination hasn't yet been through enough to justify itself for people to trust in it, that it seems to have been rushed through the process. It was approved by the FDA within a few days. Now, I know that the FDA does have its minimum standards, and my working assumption is that they didn't compromise on any of those minimum standards in order to approve this particular Pfizer COVID vaccine. But it does seem very, very odd that other medications take months and months and months to get approved, and this one was just rushed through within a matter of days, maybe a week or two. It's kind of unnerved some people, to make them feel that not enough trial testing has been done, not enough clinical trials have been done, not enough laboratory work has been put in. Yeah, in order to really prove that this vaccine does not have longer term effects. I saw one article which said that somebody, I think in Alaska, had some sort of a allergic reaction almost immediately to receiving the vaccine. But that seems to be a very isolated case. So it's not for me to judge whether this is the right or the wrong thing. But the point is that this is what we have. You have two alternatives. Either expose yourself to getting COVID-19, as we've seen. A quarter of a million Americans contracted the disease, I think, in one day. So, I mean, it's clearly a very, very big threat, particularly to people who are older or people who have underlying health issues. So your choice is either expose yourself to that or take a risk, have the vaccine and see what happens next. And, you know, the choice between that is a tough one.
And for some people, not so tough. Do you know what I mean?
And for some people, not so tough.
Yeah. Anyhow, I know, and just speaking from experience, I mean, I'm high risk. I'm asthmatic. So, you know, if I had to get coronavirus, it would be extremely severe. I mean, I'm neurotic.
So, yeah, I mean, so everybody has to make their own individual
For someone
assessments.
Like myself, it would be like a no-brainer, you know.
Mm. Yeah, okay, so, you know, for some people, it's an absolute given
essential
situation.
Yeah, life or, you know, vaccine mm-hmm. or death, you pick.
I mean, anyway, there's so many people who've contracted corona, come through it almost asymptomatic and said, what's the big issue? Why would I have risked myself with that vaccine when getting the virus for me was like a walk in the park?
Mm. All right, Anthony, let's talk about Malka Leifer. This is the Australian headmistress from Melbourne. She's been charged. Well, she's been charged with 74 charges of sex abuse at the school in Melbourne
against
in
children.
Australia against children. Yeah, and that was between 2003 and 2008. From the word go, it has been absolutely abhorrent to even be reporting on this, but we have to. I mean, how she was put on a plane in the middle of the night so that she wouldn't have to face the board and the parents when the allegations came about. She's put on a plane. She's sent to Israel. Like, we need, as a Jewish community, as a global community, we need to wake up. We need to wake up.
I agree.
And there has to be accountability. And if you're innocent.
Well, I think the story didn't end there, though.
No, it didn't.
The story didn't end there. I mean, that was
it got
one
worse.
Part of the story. Then she comes to Israel, and she's effectively had a lot of protection in Israel, which has been a very, very embarrassing, sad situation, and something which has created a lot of tension between the state of Israel and the government of Australia. The people of Australia, the Jewish community in Australia, are absolutely outraged at how the Jewish country, which they look towards and respect so much because the Australian Jewish community really are supporters of Israel, that this matter has come between us, has really come between us, because unfortunately she's had protection from all the right places in the wrong, the worst possible way. The good news for all of those who want to see justice done and want to see Malka Leifer answer to her charges is that yesterday Justice Minister Avi Nissen-Coren actually signed an extradition order to send her to stand trial in Australia. So as far as the Israeli legal system is concerned, the game is done. The game is over. She will be sent to Australia within, I believe, the next 60 days to stand trial in Australia. The Israeli courts have gone through a massive convoluted process to try to prove that she is psychologically and psychiatrically fit to stand trial. That was determined finally by the Supreme Court, which ruled on an appeal the day before yesterday, and as a result of which Israel's justice minister was free yesterday to sign that extradition order. I certainly hope that from Israel's point of view, this matter is now put to bed, done and dusted, because whether or not she is guilty, and I know people have jumped to their conclusions and everybody has the right to their views, but whether or not she is guilty,
you go and
I think
face the charges.
It has been,
go and prove your innocence.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. Or prove
right,
your guilt.
I think
yeah.
that it's been the Israeli government's responsibility to send her to stand trial and for the Australian courts to rule on this case. And they will decide whether or not she is guilty of these charges. There is a lot of evidence, massive amounts of evidence that has been brought, which has been convincing to many people. But let the courts decide that it's not for the Israeli government to stand in the way of the Australian legal system and prevent this trial from happening.
Anthony, today is your last day for a week. You're taking a break for a week. Anthony Reich, you're still with me. Anthony?
Kathy, I'm still with you. Sorry.
Okay,
I'm
great.
With you.
All right. So, Lee, we were talking just before news. We were talking about Malka Leifer. I just looked up quickly. She's had over 70 court appearances since she arrived in Israel. It's the most bizarre story. And there's a very good documentary, actually, that's available on YouTube about her. I don't know if you've seen it, but how they proved that she was not the sack of potatoes. because her defense team were basically saying that she had health issues and she had mental health issues and she was basically like a sack of potatoes and, you know, she had to have day and nighttime nurses. And so there's this group in Israel, I can't think of their name right now, but they actually help people who are victims of sex abuse. And they arranged this investigation. It's like a military operation. And they went in with these cameras hidden as, you know, bottles lying on the side of the street in, you know, disguised as litter. They dressed the investigators up as workmen who were working in a building across the road. And they got all this video coverage of her. And that's how they prove. I mean, it's been the most unbelievable story. Why do you think it has taken this long for Israel to respond? Like, how much of it was political? And is there any particular reason why it has taken so long? You know, I'd be interested in your analysis on it.
I think that my view is because she belongs to a certain Haredi sect, she just got the protection of the people in that sect. And some of them were senior officials in the government, ministers in the government even, who offered her protection, and at every turn just put roadblocks in the way and got things confused with bureaucracy. This whole argument that she brought, that she was psychologically unfit to stand trial, was her main defense. So she hasn't really ever said, "I didn't do it. The charges against me are false. They've been trumped up. They're all nonsense. I don't know where these stories come from." That's never really been the approach. The approach has been that she's just psychologically unfit. So I don't know whether that is tantamount to some sort of an acknowledgement that she was involved in these terrible acts or not. But I think that she just simply had support from very, very high places where she was just given the protection from Israel's legal system, from the bureaucracy, from the Ministry of Health that was responsible for assessing her psychological well-being. I think that she simply got help from places, from high places, and this just got bogged down in bureaucracy. Ultimately, thankfully for our democracy, we have a turnover of individuals in those senior levels. And as soon as those individuals were replaced and were no longer in those highly influential positions, then things became different for her. And I think that that's why we've reached this situation that we're in right now, where the Justice Minister has signed the extradition order. Because if it had been for those people still remaining in their positions, I'm not sure that we would have got to this situation today, which is a sad statement of how certain people operate. Because when you take up a position in government, one likes to think that you have a certain allegiance, a certain obligation to the general public to carry out the terms of what a democratic country is all about, rather than pursuing individual cases where this is certainly the feeling that we've had from this one.
Yeah, so interesting. I was also thinking about this in terms of, you know, in temple times when they had the Sanhedrin, 71 judges. If somebody was accused of murder and all 71 judges agreed that this person was guilty of murder, the murderer went free. Because it meant that there wasn't a reasonable representation of somebody who was fighting for the rights of the murderer, right? That's right, not what this is. This is, you know, it's a click. It's like a little click, and everybody protecting because it brings a bad name on the click if something happens. It's terrible. It's really terrible. Anyway,
I think it's also a statement about, you know, to some degree how our society operates. I mean, this particular case, I think, shows up to some degree that unfortunately, when certain communities decide to rally around an individual, for better or for worse, whether it's justified or it's not, it's very, very difficult to break that down. And if you are one of the small people within that community trying to fight a cause and the community rallies around the other side against you, you have absolutely no chance at all of getting a fair hearing. And I think that that's highly problematic. That's a highly problematic issue that we have within our society. I don't have any magical answers or suggestions as to how we might deal with it, but it's just an observation of certain aspects of our society where, unfortunately, once they decide to protect somebody, it's enormously difficult to break that down. And we've seen this at the highest levels of government.
Yeah, we see it here. We see it here also in South Africa. I don't think that it's unique to Israel and South Africa. I think it's everywhere in the world where that particular, where the politics just drive, you know, a completely different conversation rather than it being about the issues at hand. And until that changes, unfortunately, we are part of the problem, not part of the solution. Anthony, very, very quickly, a story that we've wanted to speak about since Monday. And this is about Israeli sportsmen and women who have performed well, apparently, over the last week. Well, actually, it's over the last 2 weeks.
Well, this is actually really over the last week because most of them really, did well over the last weekend, which is when the sports events seem to be concentrated. And I did just want to mention this because I think, you know, we do get a lot of pride. You know, people don't take it for granted that as a Jewish country, we have good sportsmen and women. And over the years, we've managed to show that we've had, very good representations in international competitions at the Olympic Games, winning Olympic medals along the way. So, we certainly have improved the way that our sports works. And, you know, we're very proud, for example, of our NBA basketball player, Denny Avdia. He was chosen by the Washington Wizards in the recent pick for the NBA, and he got his first real taste of NBA action last weekend when he played in a warm-up game for the Wizards. He scored 15 points. He shot three from three from outside the circle, three-pointers, and he managed to help the Wizards, unfortunately, to lose on that particular occasion, but he himself looked very good, and we were very proud, and of course, lots of Israelis will be supporting him. In addition to that, we had 14-year-old Emuna Samuels, who has worked her way up the European taekwondo ladder, and she did really, really well in the taekwondo championship. She was the runner-up in the European championships. She is setting her sights on going to the Olympic Games in 2028. Hopefully she will, things will be different by then and she will be able to participate. A religious girl participating in Taekwondo, respecting her religion, keeping Shabbat, keeping all the principles that she wants to keep, as well as competing at a very high level. So we're extremely proud of her. And we're also proud of Artem Dolgopoyat, who won the bronze medal for vault in the gymnastics competition in the European Championships. He won a gold medal as well, though, for the floor exercise, which we're more impressed with and very, very proud of. So we hope that he will also do well going forward. Another Israeli gymnast, Alexander Mayakinin, won a bronze medal for the high bar event. So again, Israelis doing well in general in the gymnastics field, even though we have to add at this point, unfortunately, that there are some countries who were not participating, particularly Russia, in this competition due to the COVID-19 situation. But nonetheless, we are proud of our athletes and how well they've done.
Anthony Rach, this is where we say bye-bye. Enjoy your time off. Are you going away? Are you going to be traveling at all?
To where? Where do we travel to these days?
Well, don't go to the mall. That's all I can say.
I don't know. There's not much traveling to do these days.
Don't explore the desert. Go do Tiolim.
They are. I mean, if the weather's good, certainly it's exciting to see the rain falling, even for people who don't necessarily like rain. Lots and lots of rain. There is still talk about the fact that we might have to open the Degania Dam for the first time since 1992 in order to allow water from the Kinneret to flow down towards the Dead Sea, down the River Jordan. The Kinneret is about a meter from its full situation, which is miraculous because in recent years we've not seen that. So certainly a nice time to go out if it's dry to see some of the effects of the rainfall. I'm not sure yet. We will see what happens and I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah. Clive weighing in on Malkalafa before I let you go, saying protecting Malkalafa, is it different from protecting Bill Clinton, Jeffrey Epstein and many others? I don't think that it is. I think
probably not.
I don't think it's different at all.
I think there are differences.
Except that she's a woman, which is rare in and of itself.
I think the main difference here from those ones is, I mean, obviously those individuals have influence at the very highest places. What we're seeing here is that she herself, Malka Leifer, has no influence as an individual, which is what Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton and those types of people had, because those individuals were highly influential. They were wealthy. They had political power, whatever it was. So as individuals, they were very influential, and that influence was brought to bear on people who were around them to perhaps channel the legal decision in a certain way. In the case of Malka Leifer, she herself has zero political influence at all, but she got the support of a community, and that community has massive support and influence around the place. So really, this is about a community causing the influence to be brought to bear rather than an individual. That was what I would say about the differences between
which means she might actually have more of an impact. And she might even be better connected than the Jeffrey Epsteins and the Bill Clintons. So anyway.
Well, it just shows this community's power and influence, and they might fight numerous causes, not only the Malka Leifer cause. In the case of Epstein or Clinton, there was one case to fight. They fought it. They got the influence, whatever happened. But here we've got numerous causes that are being fought from different sides of this community, different things, and they are all being brought to bear in this highly influential way.
No, it's actually incredible. I mean, there's so much to the story, from how the community reacted, put this alleged pedophile on a plane, sent her to Israel where she was protected by another community. It's taken so many years and over 70 court appearances to actually get her extradited back to Australia. It's caused diplomatic incidents. It's damaged the relationship between Israel and Australia, and you know. And then you also look at the people on the ground, the family, the three daughters, the three sisters who came out and actually laid the initial charges. You know, that whole family was outcast. They were kicked out of their community.
Right. It's done a lot of damage in many, many respects, and of course, massive costs.
We need to
waste
wake up.
Time to the Israeli judicial system.
Yeah.
So all in all, you know, I don't see many good things that has come out of this at all.
Anthony Reich, this is where we leave it. We love and leave it. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest. You'll be able to sleep a little bit later, maybe, maybe not.
I will do that, definitely.
And we'll catch up with you in a week's time.
Take care.
You too. God bless,
Shabbat
Anthony.
Shalom. Have a good
Shabbat
day.
Shalom. Bye-bye.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.